What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Chinee Ogwumike, and welcome to the Chinee Show, where if you got game, you got game, period. We are your home for hoops, and it is March Madness, so we have a lot to get to. The Chinee Show airs weekly on Players TV, which you can also find all over my YouTube channel. Now, before we get started, round of applause. Let me say, no, not like that. Not that round of applause. A very classy round of applause. To all of you, thank you so much. Over 3,500 people have subscribed to the Chinee Show in the last month alone. We are rocking, we are rolling. I am grateful for all of you for liking, for commenting, for sending some funny questions that we got to last week. But nonetheless, thank you so much. And we're just getting started. On today's show, we are going to break down the women's tournament, all of the March Madness, because we all know the women's tournament is where it's at. We're going to do a round of 32 recap, and also I'm going to get into my predictions. Yes, my predictions. And then, of course, we're going to play our favorite game, Hot or Not. So this year, I added the best assignment. I am back on women's basketball coverage. Now, the reason that it took a little bit of while is because I'm based in LA working primarily NBA Today and NBA Countdown, and it's hard to be in two places at once, but this year we're able to make it work. I was thrilled to start my assignment in Bristol, covering in studio the round of 32. So it is time to do a round of 32 recap. And shout out to Nikki Fargus and Kelsey Riggs, who I worked with in studio. We had a blast. It was chaotic, a little behind the scenes of what it's like to be a broadcaster in March Madness. So we had to be ready on air at 12 noon East Coast time. And we did not leave the studio until maybe 12:30 a.m. because there are so many games and we had to update the audiences almost every 15 minutes on all those games. So we had a big, like it was about this size of an LED screen with all the games up. And we'd be like, oh, did you see what's happening here? Oh, did you see what's happening here? Oh my gosh, coming to you live in 2 minutes. It was nuts, but it was madness in itself. Like madness is the word, right? It was madness, but it was fun. It was a beautiful chaos. And we got to talk about the most talked about tournament we've seen in recent years. So let's break down the round of 32. And since it is March, it is rodeo season back home in Houston, Texas. Let's go. And also, Cowboy Carter, Beyonce's album, is about to come out, the country album. I know people are having a good time at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, so we're going to do a roundup of the 32 teams that advanced to the Sweet 16. All right, giddy up, y'all. Saddle up, y'all. Let's get it. It is the round of 32 roundup or recap in March Madness. I will break down the games, the storylines, and of course, you know, since we're talking about the South, why don't we start with the Bayou? LSU handled Middle Tennessee. Now, it was closer than people thought, but let's talk about how their big scorers really stepped up. LSU had four scorers in double figures. Angel Reese, 20 points, 11 rebounds, per usual. Flaje Johnson has been a huge energy boost, 21 points, 4 rebounds. Anissa Morrow, the Batman and Robin, the duo, with Angel Reese, 19 points, 13 rebounds. And Michaela Williams, a sensational freshman, 16 points and 6 rebounds. All right, there's a lot going on with LSU. So let's start with on the court. So LSU goes and they beat Middle Tennessee to advance to the Sweet 16. Now that game was not a walk in the park. Now the number that has been floating around LSU is the number that they have a plus 51 free throw attempt differential. And a lot of people are saying, oh, they're getting the whistle and all that type of stuff. You actually have to realize that that has been who LSU has been the entire course of the season. They lead the NCAA in most free throw attempts per game. And also you'd see that they were not playing. They did not have their best offensive performances in the first two rounds. But still, when they miss, they get their rebounds. No better example than Angel Reese, who was 1-for-7 from the field in the first round, but still had 19 rebounds and still able to get to about double-digit points. I think 10 points. So yes, the free throw has benefited LSU right in the first two rounds, but still it's benefited them over the course of the entire season. So when you talk about that, make sure you recognize that that is one of their strengths as well. Now to off of the court. Whew. When it comes to Kim Mulkey, I'm going to reserve a large portion of my thoughts for when the article comes out, because I don't want to have a rush to judgment with information that has not been presented as of yet. But this is a very, very, very distracting circumstance, which the players have handled pretty well. And I also found it interesting that a lot of the players have rushed to say, hey, we're standing by you, Coach Mulkey, which makes sense. She's their coach, and in their small sample size of a few years playing under her, they probably have had great experiences because they've won a national championship and they've also exploded into superstars. But still, I do think a lot of the public, we're trying to reconcile what we have historically known from issues that have followed Coach Mulkey, whether it's her players or the institutions where, you know, she has coached, to the current realities that we're seeing and hearing from their players. So much so that when the idea and the notion of the Washington Post dropping an article, you know, right after that, we saw that Flage jumped to Twitter and posted a picture hugging Coach Mulkey. You can see Angel, after beating Middle Tennessee State, hugging Coach Mulkey and them having a really strong embrace. Now, this is a team that we have seen has rallied in moments of crisis, whether it is individuals, whether it is collectively. So, like, they understand what it's like to play with a chip on their shoulder. But overall, I'm not surprised, because there have been situations that have been kind of felt like the accountability was not all the way there, particularly when it comes to players that have played under Coach Mulkey. And I'm saying this with love, because Coach Mulkey is someone I grew up in Texas, someone that was the first coach that walked into our home, the Ogumike family home, to recruit NECA, my sister at that time. So I was around maybe 13, 14, NECA 15, 16, and she was the first one to say, I see greatness in your daughters. And she's someone that had a good relationship with my parents, and to this day, I've had a great relationship with, right? But there are circumstances, time and time again, where you wonder, okay, your player is going through this, how are you to support the player? And there's crickets. Yet, in this instance, when someone is coming for you, there is a loud clap back to that. Where was that energy before? We all know what it is. You're able to be one of the greatest coaches, and you're able to survive and advance in a tournament, and we can all be waiting with our popcorn ready. And then I will speak on that after we all get to see what he wrote. South Carolina hammered North Carolina. I mean, especially in the first three quarters. I think if you look at the final score, you'd be like, oh, that was a blowout. You don't understand the level of blowoutery. South Carolina had five players in double digits, led by 20 points and 9 rebounds from my girl, Malaysia Fulwiley, and then 12 points and 10 rebounds in the return of Camilla Cardosa. They shot 45% from the field, and they out-rebounded their state rival, 54-33. But that was not the number that had me going crazy. So we were in studio, we were watching this game, and then I pull over my stats broadcast that tells you all the important categorical basketball analytical trends, and I was watching, I was like, yo, they got 29-0 bench points. They finished with 51-0 bench points. Their bench outscored the entire other team. We've been saying it all year long. South Carolina has two championship teams. This was wild. Like, this is a team that didn't return anybody, a starter from last year. And then they just reload. Like, it broke my head. It really broke my head. South Carolina is phenomenal. And respectfully, congratulations on a great season, UNC. But, like, what? How does this happen? It happens because you take a team that is Final Four caliber, you take one of the greatest coaches of all time in Dawn Staley, who also is one of the greatest players of all time, and you're seeing the perennial powerhouse being built in real time. You're seeing players that get better. They take the loss and the pain of losing last year, and on that huge platform, on that huge viewership window in which, you know, their opponents are here saying bye-bye to you and all that type of stuff, and people took that personal. People took that personal. People like Bree Hall and Raven Johnson, who have upped their shooting percentages. Then you get Tahina Pow-Pow. Pow-Pow. You get Tahina Pow-Pow, and you're able to shoot the three-point shot in one of the best percentages when it comes to the rest of the field. And then you have like 5-6 bangers in the paint that know how to play defense and offense. Like, I'm sorry, like I'm almost out of breath, but South Carolina is the team to beat. I remember them asking me before the tournament started, is it South Carolina versus the field? Who you taking? I said, I'm taking South Carolina. And that was before this performance. And after this performance, I'm like, I'm taking South Carolina in all caps, period. And since I'm already in my feelings, why don't we just lean into it? Let's talk about Stanford versus Iowa State, that amazing matchup, the battle of the bigs in the front court. Let's talk my school and Iowa State, because I am claiming Audie Crooks. Like, we're now family. She had the most outstanding performance of the first round. 18 for 20 from the field, shooting 90% field goal percentage, dropping 40, the most points in an NCAA tournament debut in the last 25 years. She was getting buckets. And I'm not gonna lie, after that first round, I was big nervous. But she just reminded me, this might be the greatest freshman class that we have seen in recent time. I know people talk about Juju Watkins, Hannah Hidalgo, Malaysia Fulwiley, Michaela Williams, Audie Crooks, Madison Booker. Can someone, I need our producers to crunch the number. What year were these ladies born? If they're 19, that means it's, was it, are these, something about the year of 2003, 2004, like, these freshmen are different, and we didn't even talk about Audie Crooks that much. I will never forget, a couple years, I've been seeing her highlights floating around social media. I was like, that girl can ball, she's got a mean drop step. And then to do that in Maples Pavilion, a pavilion that I have played in, it was emotional for me. And I love Coach Bill Fennelly. He was actually my U18 USA coach, and he's such a nice guy. His franchise, his organization, Iowa State. Why did I say franchise? That's my NBA show. His squad, Iowa State. Like, he's one of those long-term greats when it comes to women's college basketball. And so I knew that was not going to be an easy game for my Stanford Cardinal. But guess what happened? Game of the tournament so far. So we were dealing with Audie Crooks. I was like, oh my gosh, how my girls going to handle it? It was Cam Brink, Kiki Irioffen. And all year long, I'll tell you this right here, and I have to lean in. When I went to the game in which Coach Tara Vanderveer became the all-time winningest coach in basketball, surpassing Coach K, I watched the game, I was courtside, and I said in that moment after watching my girl Kiki Irioffen, she gives me shades of baby Asia Wilson. And I say baby because Asia's on a whole nother level, but you can see the Asia in her game. I was watching her catch the ball, face up, attack to open spaces, finish with the left, because we all know Asia's a lefty, but she's a righty. Like, having that ability to go both hands and be ambidextrous, to have that face up jumper, just to be bouncy and springy. I said it then, I told Allison, Allison's not on the show today, she's not on the call right now, but I told Allison, and she could be my witness. I said, she's giving me shades of Asia Wilson. And then now, after watching the game where Kiki Irioffen goes for 40, we have an overtime thriller. Brooke Dimitri, like, hits a huge three, ballsy three. My girls got it. I'm not gonna lie. I was very nervous, but we pulled it out. And speaking of Kiki Irioffen, if there's one player that is most improved in the landscape of women's college basketball, it's her. She averaged 7 points last year, and this year she's averaging 19. She actually averages more than Cam. And Cam has been the face of Stanford, arguably. So I'm just glad that Kiki had this huge breakout party in this game. And it takes me back to the time where here in LA, she's from Cali. I remember I was training with Jamal Lavelle, who nobody would know that's him because he goes by Dash. Y'all know him on the streets as Dashletics, but you really know him on the streets because he trains Paul George. And he was the first one to do that Erykah Badu song that became the soundtrack to Paul George's greatness. So he was the one that trains Paul George and did that song Synergy. He also trained, before he trained Paul George, he was training me and my sister and the Sparks. And so I'd come in to a gym and we train. And I remember after my workout, he's like, yo, see, because he always talks like that. I need you to stay. There's this girl. She's African like you. Like, She's going to Stanford. She's smart. She's brilliant. You know, all that type of stuff. Stay. I'm telling you, she's different. She's different. Y'all about to go to the next level. I was like, okay. I got to stay because it's my sister, my Niger sister, and everything. I stayed. I met her. She's a sweetheart. She's a hard worker. She did all of the drills that we do, you know, the drills that helped me prepare for the league. She did them right there with me. But then at the end, when I was about to leave, she stayed to hang out on the court. And then she was just like, oh, dunk. Oh, this, because my workout was finished earlier. Like, I was there an hour earlier, so I stayed to, like, work out with her a little bit more. So she was finishing her workout, dunking things left, right, and center. I was like, oh, she's different. And her bounce is smooth. I know you guys have seen those clips of her dunking from high school. That was the same gym that I was talking about that we used to work out. And so she goes to Stanford. I know she had a, you know, freshman year is always, early seasons are always an adjustment, but I was not surprised. I was waiting for the moment. And if you followed her all season long, even that win in which Tara became the all-time winningest, I think she had like a 40-piece in that, or like 38 or something like that. She has arrived. She's been arrived. And now I'm just grateful that she is going to get the love on the national stage. And then I even saw some people saying like, ooh, I can see Kiki going to Bay Area with a new expansion team. Who knows what her path is going to be? But still, game of the tournament so far, Stanford, Iowa State. Shout out to Audie Crooks for doing her thing as a freshman. Shout out to Kiki Aroffin for bringing us home. Y'all, that game was East Coast. It was East Coast 12:30, and I was stressing. I was stressing, but Stanford survives and advances, and wow, I had a blast watching that and calling it on air for ESPN. Next up, Iowa versus West Virginia. Now, this matchup was spicy because it could have gone either way. Again, we're talking about a 1 seed taking on an 8 seed. And I think a lot of people have said, oh, based off of the news, based off of the notoriety, Caitlin Clark and Iowa pencil them in as national champions. Hold your roll. We've all known that there are other great teams, South Carolina out there. We've got a new kid on the block in Juju Watkins in USC. UConn is playing their better version of basketball. LSU is defending champs. We've all known there are other teams that are great. Iowa has a great player that can propel her team far. So this one being a 1 seed versus 8 seed that went the distance and honestly towards the last few minutes could have been a coin flip, should be a little bit sobering to those people that say, hey, Caitlin Clark, national championship. Like, she's amazing. She is one of the greatest that we've ever seen in college basketball. But this one was close. Now, there are two things that a lot of people are talking about. The free throw differential that worked to Iowa's favor was that they shot 30 free throws to West Virginia's 5. Now, that's a very hard thing to overcome, especially considering you're going to their home court and now you're not getting the call. And this was a close game down the stretch. But Iowa did make some big shots late, but they also forced their way to the free throw line. And so that's a tough pill to swallow. But I did like, after the game, this was Caitlin Clark's last time in Carver Hawkeye Arena, or is it Hawkeye Carver, whatever way it goes. That was her last time on her home floor. And I loved how the Iowa team stayed out there because this is a special moment in time. This season where they're getting tremendous viewership, tremendous attendance. They were just in the crowd, in the fans, in the stands, signing autographs. Wow, like I just sort of took a mental note of like what we witnessed with Iowa this season behind Caitlin Clark. That is something to forever remember and to forever behold. Now let's get to the nitty gritty though, because there was a clip circling around about Caitlin Clark over the first 2 rounds complaining to the refs. Now she needs to be careful because a lot of her complaints I feel like could be distracting to her own game. Like we did not see like those typical super efficient, at least in the first round, shooting performances from Caitlin. And it was hilarious to see her dad be like, stop, from the stands. And say like, no, focus on the game at hand. The clip of her saying, shut the F up to the ref, a lot of people were like, oh, I can't watch. I can't have my family watch this anymore. Like, come on, y'all. This is sports. This is competitive. These are people that are really, like, they've locked themselves in gyms. They've visualized going up against their opponents. This is who we are. It's not like women's game has to be on better behavior than the men's, meaning, like, we're not going to go and get into fights and all that type of stuff. Like, we're going to be competitors, and that comes with those moments of being, like, you know, on edge. And that's just natural. That's something that we have always been. And a lot of people saying, like, oh, Caitlin Clark, villain of women's basketball. I'll respond and say, have you watched the W? We got plenty of villains. healthy villains. I'm talking about healthy villains. People that people like the all-time leading scorer in the WNBA, Diana Taurasi. Have you watched her play? Have you seen her talk? Because a lot of people talk, oh, the Diana, you know, the icon, all that type of stuff. She will tell you something when you step on the floor with her. She, and 9 times out of 10, it's not even you, it's the ref she's talking to. Alyssa Thomas, my former teammate with the Connecticut Sun, she will talk to you straight to your face and tell you about yourself as we're competing. You know, Kelsey Plum will talk to fans. There's so many players, the list goes on and on, where we have villains, but they're not like bad villains, they're like the great sport villains, where you get a little bit of sauce with the swag on the court. So like Caitlin being the first one, she's a villain, all that type of stuff. Y'all can miss me with that. We've been had that. And guess what? That shows you that the game is in a healthy place where we get to be our authentic selves because we are grown women competing. And that's what we do. We talk our ish and we back it up. Period. Now that we've done a roundup of the round of 32, it's time to build out my Sweet 16 bracket. So let's get to it. So one of our producers here on the Chanae Show and Players TV, Colin, is going to call it a matchup. I'm going to sip my icy and tell you who I've got.
Oregon State versus Notre Dame.
Ooh! So depth is going to be an issue for Notre Dame because they missed a couple players this season, and they're going to have to deal with Reagan Beers, who is, I think, like third in the field in field goal percentage at 66%. But there's something about Hannah Hidalgo this season, Sonia Citrone. So give me Notre Dame. I think this is the first time ever I'm going against the Pac-12, but since it's over the Pac-12, might as well just keep it pushing. So give me ND.
Next matchup, Gonzaga versus Texas.
I'm team Madison Booker. Give me Texas. They're a one seed. They've earned their stripes. And I believe in Madison Booker. And I love that Kevin Durant, 35 supporting 35. KD came in to support Madison Booker, who is one of the best freshmen in the country. Side note, Madison Booker made Longhorn history, becoming the with 14 assists in her opening round, setting history there. Love the parallels between her and KD. Great mid-range scorers, both of them great freshman campaigns, and yeah.
Baylor versus USC.
Shout
by
out
three.
To Baylor, they beat Virginia Tech, but it was without Liz Kitley. Now they're going up against USC, a one seed. I'm going to still go with Team Juju, Team Mackenzie Forbes, so give me the Trojans. And I won't do the whole, na, 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 na. That's one of like the most obnoxious things. Being in the Pac-12, them running around on the horse, like, da, 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 na, 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 na. But then I have no room to talk because ours is a tree. So next, Colin.
LSU versus UCLA.
So this is probably going to be the most competitive matchup of the next round. LSU versus UCLA. UCLA is a team, we all know what LSU can do. They've been in the national headlines. But this is a team that is loaded. Their backcourt with Kiki Rice and Charisma Osborne can combine for like 35, 40 points. Plus, Lauren Betts is back. Lauren Betts is 6'8". The wild thing is that Tara and Sanford almost had Kiki, Lauren Betts, and Cam this season, but instead Lauren transfers to UCLA where she is the star, the leading scorer, and leading rebounder. And so for Angel Reese, for Anissa Mara, for all of their post players to go up against Lauren Betts, that is not going to be a walk in the park. But still, even though UCLA will push them to the brink, I've still got the LSU Tigers coming out of that one. It's time for our favorite segment, Hot or Not, where I get a subject, a hot topic, and I tell you whether it's hot or it's not. Let's get into it. Matt Barnes in a standoff with a possum. That's something that I never thought I would say, but that was wild. I actually had a situation, it was not with a possum, but growing up, we had this big house back in Spring, Texas, and we left the window open and a bird flew in, and it just set our whole house a havoc. It was nuts. I remember when it flew and I was like, oh, and I screamed for NECA. And then I ran into a room. Poor NECA. I should have like brought NECA with me. But I was like, NECA, there's a bird. And I start sprinting. And I closed the door. But NECA wasn't following me, so I knew she was going to go find cover somewhere. We had to go get our neighbor to help us get the bird out of our house. Never a possum. I would have locked myself in a room and called animal control. That's what I would have done. But shout out to Matt Barnes for handling that situation. Not hot. Not cool. You guys know I love to watch all kinds of television, all kinds of movies, and even documentaries and docuseries. And there was one that immediately that I had to watch, because if you're around my age, if you're a part of the millennial generation, we all grew up watching Nickelodeon. And so I watched Quiet on Set. And I think it raised great awareness to the toxic cultures that happen right here in Los Angeles and everywhere, where it involves young people that are in entertainment that get exploited. And it happened to be, unfortunately, a lot of our favorites. I mean, I grew up loving The Amanda Bynes Show. I grew up watching Drake and Josh and all of the different manifestations of that creative period that hit our TV screens. And to see what those people have been through, I think it's just another good reminder that we need to give grace to a lot of these young stars that are in the limelight, that are learning on the fly, and that we're not protected. Next subject, Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson on Netflix. So I'm actually gonna say this is hot. This is hot. You know why it's hot? Because everyone is going to tune in. Now, it's hot, but it's also unfair because we've seen recently Mike Tyson needing a cane to walk around. And Jake Paul, who's probably my age, in the best shape of his life, who has tailor-made his boxing career to face up against the one of the legends, that I'm like, what? We all know what it is. We all know what it is. But the crazy thing is that you've got probably one of the hottest social media athletes taking on one of the greatest athletes of all time. Like, it's a cool way to bring the generations together. I'm glad Mike Tyson's gonna get another payday. That's all I really care about. And also, I'm here to see it. Like, all Mike needs to do, get a hook. Like, get one. Just get one. Like, if he, come on. I mean, I'm not a boxing person. I'm now like a boxing wife a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I've been watching more and more boxing. My guy, literally, that's all he does in his free time. All of the greats, Pacquiao, Crawford, all these people, like, they're always on his TV screens. And so I watch a lot of boxing now. I'm just now getting into the sport. It's going to be entertaining. It's something that young people will want to tune in for, older people want to tune in for. Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, entertaining. They're both getting paid. We get to talk about a legend. I want Mike to win. And shout out to Netflix. Netflix out here diversifying with sport in a way where we get a live competition. So, and everybody's got Netflix these days, so I'll be tuned. Jersey swap shenanigans. Somebody got to watch out for these young players. Come on, y'all. So Grady Dick and Anthony Black did a jersey swap. Come on. Like, we all knew that that was a problem. That was intentional. They both looked at each other like, oh, yeah, we're going to do it. And they did it. And the problem is, I mean, this is a conspiracy. Yes, it's a conspiracy because it was not true. But we saw on Twitter that, like, that LinkedIn job posting for a new Orlando Magic social media coordinator, I thought that was hilarious. That was not true, but it was still funny. But more importantly, don't risk your job like that for a bad joke. Like, and we all know Grady Dick. We saw what he wore to the draft. Like, that guy is different. He's out there. He knows, like, he definitely likes to push boundaries. This was too close to the sun, Grady. Too close to the sun. Adam Silver, I'm sure he got a call. I'm sure he got a call after that. And that is a wrap for this episode of The Chanae Show. Thank you for watching with me. We talked about the round of 32. We're approaching the Sweet 16. The next time we sit and talk, it will be the Final Four. So make sure you continue to like, make sure you comment and subscribe. I want to get your thoughts as we're watching the games. I will answer them like you've seen right here in our show. That is it. It's your girl, Chanae. This is your home for hoops. We're talking about all hoops. But right now, it's all about the ladies. It's all about March Madness. Because if you got game, you got game, period. I will see y'all later.